Welcome to the Phoenix Cast, a podcast about cybersecurity, technology, and innovation issues in the military. We are your hosts, John,
Rich,
and Kyle.
Rich and I are both U.S. Marines, and the opinions expressed on the cast are our own, not official military policy.
And the opinions expressed by me are my own, not those of my employer or any other businesses I happen to be associated with.
For today's episode, we're joined by a very special guest, Director of IC4, Brigadier General Jay Matos. Sir, thanks so much for joining the cast. Could you give us an intro?
Sure. First, I just want to say thank you for the opportunity here. I think I've listened to just about all these podcasts that you've put out there. So I'm a long time listener, first time speaker. So really, thanks for the opportunity, and really do look forward to this opportunity to talk a little bit about what the Marine Corps is doing and as far as network modernization. So, career communicator, I joined a long time ago, back in 1990. I went to comm school, TBS in 89, so it's been a while since I've been in, but a lot of road behind me that I've learned from. So, as career communicator, this, at that point, single channel, but it's morphed in over time into the data world and then into space and then to information environment. So a lot of time out in the FMF, a spin at DISA, operate and defend the networks out there at DISA, and then first tour as a general officer of the Space Command, so I've got the space stink on me there. And then also, again, MAR-4 PAC really started working into that information maneuver sphere. How do we tie together the information environment to support operations going there? So, not an expert in anything, but I've had a lot of experience across the board there.
And John, I want to add one thing here really quick, because for the first time in this podcast history, I now have professional overlap with one of our guests. So when General Matos was the commanding officer of 7th Communications Battalion, I was a lowly staff sergeant being mentored by Chief Warrant Officer 3, Blaine Hebert, if Blaine's out there, who taught me a great deal about what a warrant officer was and convinced me to put my package in. But sir, it was awesome serving under you then. I'm super stoked to have you on now.
Oh, great. And again, look, my baby's all grown up. You're grown from
exactly
now to where you're at. So great job. And look forward to this opportunity to speak with you and work with you again.
I would say the grown up part is debatable, but we'll see how we get there on the cast.
Listen, I feel attacked. Wow. Okay, John, I see how the love is. All right.
The general said we could start with the truth and take it where it leads us. So here we go. Starting with this truth. So I'm hearing about Task Force NetMod, which is the genesis of what started at the two-star level of Task Force Phoenix. And Task Force NetMod, for those who are not familiar, has MCSEN 2030, cloud services, talent management, and record management. And you're the one spearheading this. Could you give us what does this actually mean and what are you doing with this?
Sure, that's a great question. But I'm going to start a little bit before Task Force NetMod, because that's the most recent piece. But you've got to start back into Task Force Network Modernization. Why are we even doing network modernization? We don't do network modernization for its own sake, correct? We do it because we want to access our data. We want to use our data. We want to operationalize our data to set the stage to operate and fight and win in the competition phase, the crisis and conflict phases. So, we don't do it for its own sake. We want to put in the necessary infrastructure, the platform, the security in order to enable that usage of that data. We want to be able to use that data to inform us, to make more effective decisions, and to more quickly execute our business and our warfighting operations. When you talk about network modernization, this isn't just about the enterprise network. I think a lot of times people think the network, network modernization, they think the enterprise network or the data networks are out there. This also encompasses the tactical systems, the tactical radios, the satellite radios, single channel radios, because those all tie into the network. They tie, whether they're pushing data from the tactical edge into the network, the enterprise network for use into the cloud for use manipulation. A targeting piece, or as that information comes from the cloud or comes from a higher source down to the tactical edge, it needs to go through those tactical systems. So when we talk network modernization, please think more than just the network. It is everything from the very, very tactical edge of that single channel radio all the way up to the high speed routers and switches and cloud servers.
Okay, sir. So just to kind of get in a little bit of detail here, what I heard you say was modernizing the network, which I think everybody generally thinks is making the network able to handle all the new fancy tools that we either want to fire from or use the network for. An important part I took away from that was you were saying that all the power or your focus isn't around the data that those things either produce or use or sense. Did I hear that correctly?
Right. Because at the end of the day, the data is the most important. I can really have these exquisite networks and link point A, person A to person B. But if there's nothing passing or discussing between those two, then it's the challenge. It's getting that data, getting access to that data and pushing it. Really, at the end of the day, we're going to operate in a much more distributed manner. We're going to be spread out more than ever in space, and you're going to be using different technology. You talk about the Nemesis strike missile. You talk about the Gator. You talk about Mux Mail and the MTCX and those capabilities out there. Those all need to be tied together. Again, they can't. I can't put a exquisite sensor, intelligence sensor on Okinawa that's pulling in information to assist in the targeting. If I can't push that down from Okinawa, as that information comes into that sensor node on Okinawa, it now needs to go through a router, switch, and server. It needs to go through that is run by contractors, that is run by the enterprise network aboard, Camp Foster and the Okinawa, and then it goes through a pipe down, and it's going to go over a satellite system out of Fort Buckner to a tactical satellite system. Then it's going to get down, broken down further. It may go to a NOTAM, the network on the move type system. It may go from that network on a move down to a single channel via a MCTAB, one of the tactical radios, and get that pushed down. But eventually, it's going to get to that Nemesis strike missile. You're going to punch into coordinates to go. But all along that line, there's pieces and parts of the network modernization that need to be upgraded, need to be maintained, need to be totally synced and ready to go to support that.
So this really sounds more like the flow of information, right? Like network being a sort of misnomer, but everyone sort of understands when you say the word network that we mean the way that things communicate. But that's just the top layer of a very deep onion of interconnected complexity that helps us get a signal from point A to a refined state of metadata that it can be used by any sort of end user or device at point B through triple Z, if you will. And that is a incredibly difficult challenge. We see this in the civilian sector all the time with companies that are modernizing, across the board. But the minute you start saying I need data from A to refinement to B, only in microscopic lab environments is that even remotely approaching simple. Everywhere else, that has infinite players in an infinite game of infinitely different variables and choices. So I just want to throw out there, sir, deep respect for the challenge that you're undertaking.
Yeah, to your very point, and that's what you're talking about. Some of that you're trying to do that in a lab environment, or even just in a commercial sector. Now multiply that, where you have active adversaries who are employing their best efforts to disrupt your ability to make those links even possible. So now you've just added a whole another layer of complexity into the whole. And communications, as we all know, is hard enough as it is. Even on a perfect day, just making the routers and switches don't go bad, or the radio link, it works and make it go. That's tough even on its best days. But at the end of the day, we need to upgrade and keep up with the capacity of our network capabilities, up with the weapon systems that are going on out there. Again, you see a lot of, you got an F-35 flying, pulls down a lot of exquisite information. That's all got to be passed down. But at the end of the day, that's being passed over by the Marine Corps Enterprise Network, enabled by potentially a tactical system. That's why we need to modernize and upgrade those networks. So that's network modernization as a whole. That's the big piece. That's why we're doing network modernization, again, at that tactical edge up to the enterprise edge. But the next piece down to that is, how do you make that happen? Now, that's all great. That looks great on PowerPoint. I briefed that to the MROC, and everybody's like, hoorah, we're all behind you. We get it. But at the end of the day, now you got to implement that plan. You got to put a plan in place to actually say how we're going to do that. So my predecessor, Brigadier General Malik, came up with was the network modernization plan. And there was two versions done. Version two was blessed off by the Marine Requirements Oversight Council back in January, and the ACMAC at the time, General Thomas, signed off of that in June of 21, the network modernization plan that listed out all those functions, who was doing them, what needed to be done on network modernization, and who was going to do it. Whether that be systems command or PEO digital or maybe he's going to be one of the function area managers, or maybe he's going to be the fleet. So they all, everybody had tasks there to do, and those tasks were assigned. So in order to procure those items for network modernization, who is going to buy them, who is going to implement them, who is going to inject them into the system, that's the network modernization plan. So we just literally just finished a second update to that plan. So it's like network, we're calling it 2.1 because it wasn't a full update. Some challenges with the budget this past year that really threw some a curveball into the planning cycle. So we have done an update. So now we have that network modernization plan that tells us how we're going to achieve network modernization. We were very successful this past year, and again, great help with the ACMAC. He helped out, and General Glavy and others. We got about for PON 23, we got about $930 million for network modernization to upgrade our gear to get us there. So that was a tremendous win for us. Now we have that network modernization plan. It says, okay, here's how we're going to spend that money. But now back to your original question was, okay, Task Force NetMod. Task Force NetMod is now, okay, how are we going to, now that we got the plan, okay, now how are we going to execute that plan, right? Who's going to do this? That's what Task Force NetMod is really the execution of the Task Force NetMod plan to get after those various areas, whether it's MCEN 2030, which we can talk about later if you'd like, you know, where we're going in the network. But it's really now at the execution phase, using some of the safe and agile principles that we have out there to now go after, bring the various teams, bringing the team of teams together to get after attacking the items that are in that network modernization plan to execute them. So that's really at the end of that network modernization plan. I'm sorry, Task Force NetMod is execution of the Task Force NetMod plan, which, as we discussed earlier, network modernization to support the whole warfighting concept that the Marine Corps is getting after. So hopefully that gets to the question you were asking.
Absolutely, sir. And just one final follow-up there. So with what you've talked through there, do you have a good understanding of what winning looks like, and how do you communicate that to your team?
Winning in terms of, when you say winning?
Well, running the task force. So in your mind, whether you kind of say, hey, Task Force NetMod, this was a win or this was a loss, I would imagine in your mind you have some sort of metric of this is winning if, and I would guess it satisfies the NetMod plan. But do you have a gate in your mind of what you're looking for or what winning would be?
Yeah. So, and again, when we set up Task Force NetMod, it was based off Task Force Phoenix. Again, as y'all are intimately familiar, and Task Force Eagle that was up at MARFORS Cyber, and General Glavy had that concept in his mind. So when Task Force NetMod was going through, he's like, hey, how are we going to implement this? And he's like, hey, this worked at MARFORS Cyber, let's implement this here. And we're like, Roger, got it. It was a good plan. We brought some of the members, Lieutenant Colonel Joni Yong, she's part of this team, building out Task Force NetMod as we build that out there. And we had the concept in mind of kind of going to those big four buckets you mentioned earlier, which was these task groups underneath the task force, Task Force NetMod, then underneath it were the four groups, MCEN, 2030, the records management, the cloud. But then we realized that those were almost too broad. And what we've done, it literally happened this past week, we've sat down with all the key players, the Tanker Ong and the Task Force NetMod team sat down with all the key players, and we created a one-to-N list, because I haven't seen the final list. But of all the key tasks that were out there that we needed to get after, and they were prioritized, we put them in a priority order. Now we're getting after, I don't know what the number one on the list was. Again, like I said, I've not seen the results of that IPT they just held. But maybe it's cloud, it's migrations to cloud. We'll use that as number one. Now that really, and instead of becoming a task group, that becomes a mini task group in its sense. The next one may be, hey, let's do, we're going to do IL-6 implementation and deployment. That's number two. So that becomes a mini task group as opposed to these broader ones, which were a little bit clunky as we worked through them. So we're getting a little more finite and a little more granular in our delineation of what a task group is underneath Task Force NetMod. So I think when you're the win is we start chunking these things off the list. And here was number one. It was the IL-6 implementation. we complete that, that's victory to me. Is we start checking those off the list, and then that, and those start showing up on the NetMod plan. We can start checking those off the list there. So that's what I see win as we start getting these and delivering the capability to the operating forces and also to the just the enterprise as a whole to support their ability to do business and warfighting functions.
Sir, that's great. And I just want to call out, I love the fact that we are learning as a team that iteration is a good thing. That we're saying, hey, here's what we got. We started with this. Sweet. Next refinement. And moving on. Really excited about that.
Hey, sir. So before we move on to the next question, I just kind of wanted to mention the kind of bookend what you said and what John said there, because I think it's like super meaningful and also super exciting for the Marine Corps, right? So very much in my own space, you know, people come, they give you these really hard tasks, right? These like wickedly challenging tasks. And they're like, go do this thing, right? For lack of a better phrase, modernize the network and make it make sense, right, to the people that are using the data that ride it. Like that's not a trivial thing, right? That is extremely challenging. So I just think it's awesome that you're refining and getting down to potentially like smaller, more measurable things. Because a lot of times when I look at a problem, I'm like, man, how am I going to measure success, to John's point? You just got to pick somewhere and start measuring and then refine the measure over time. So, I mean, it just sounds awesome. And so the reason why I bring that up is like the next question I'm going to ask you is going to seem like it's the polar opposite, right? It's going to go into like a level of complexity with a whole bunch of acronyms, right? And I preface that because I want the audience to understand we're a DoD related information technology podcast. So we're going to use some acronyms here for a second, then ask the general question. And so basically, sir, as I mentioned, right, there are a lot of acronyms about how the Marine Corps is modernizing writ large, right? Some of these acronyms are things like JADC2 or the Joint All Domain Command and Control Solution Set. You know, the audience has heard and has been through the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure or the JEDI Initiative, which has now been rebranded to the Joint Warfighter Cloud Capability or JWCC. And then you had all these things going around in 2020 and 2021 that were around Zero Trust initiatives, which now I think Joint Force Headquarters DODEN, led by General Skinner, they call Thunderdome, right, as they wrap all those like initiatives up underneath it. So the reason why I bring all
great
that
name,
up,
by the way, that's a super great name.
Yes, it is, Kyle. But the reason, sir, I bring all those up, and I'm kind of like drawing this out a little bit is, you know, as you go through the network modernization plan and you have Task Force NetMod and its units underneath it, like, how do you map all that to each other, right? And this sounds like a loaded question, but like, are you nesting kind of what you guys are working in Task Force NetMod under like pieces of all that? Like how do Marines, like if they're going to come to you as the director of C4, like, sir, how does this all connect together? Like I'm reading all this stuff out on the internet that's getting pushed out. And so I guess the question is that all nice and neatly nested in the network modernization plan? Or are you chunking these things off like as they come in to kind of a backlog of work?
Great question. I appreciate that. And, you know, shame on me for not highlighting that in intro as we were talking about the NetMod plan. But as we developed the NetMod plan, again, wasn't done in a vacuum. This was done. There's a couple of forcing documents from higher or concepts from higher that informed and drove the network modernization plan. Again, it wasn't like the Marine Corps saying, hey, here's what we're doing and take it or leave it. We nested number one within the JADC2 concept. Again, that started coming online right about the same time the NetMod plan, the first two versions, which were approved by the ACMAC in June 2021. That was just starting to come online. The JADC2 concept and how we're going to implement that and how we're going to incorporate that into what we were doing in the Marine Corps. So that was brought into version one and two of that. And then the version 2.1 is the JADC2 concept matured and the implementation plan came out and was signed out by the DECSEPDEF within the last couple months. Came in at a good time as we started wrapping up the version 2.1 of the NetMod plan. So number one, the tasks, a lot of the tasks and functions and capabilities that we're looking for in the NetMod plan are included or can be. You can draw a straight line from JADC2 into the NetMod plan. The other guiding document or guidance that we get is from the DoD CIO. So the DoD CIO planning guidance tells us to do these elements and functions, and we incorporate those into the into the network modernization plan. The key with that is the CIO does have the authority, and he looks at our plan guidance. He does have the ability to either redirect money, tell the commandant to redirect money to hit his priorities, or he can say, hey, we're going to cut your budget because you're not going after it. So we are very cognizant of what the CIO is directing us to do and incorporate it into our network modernization plan. We're also looking at naval operational architecture simply because our naval integration, our ability and our desire and the direction and guidance from the commandant to make sure we are navally integrated, to make sure that we are going forward with, meeting what the Navy is doing and making sure that our networks and our capabilities match what the Navy is doing. And so that we can be a fully integrated team going there. You know, so, and you look at those, the capabilities that are out there, and that's also, that's the beauty of having a living document like this. And we do it every year because technology changes constantly, right? A couple of years ago, no one ever heard of, 3-4 years ago, cloud was just kind of a topic. Office 365, the IL5 instantiation was really, everybody talked about it, but we really, it wasn't, hey, we're going to do this. And all of a sudden, bang, we have. Now people are looking at, zero trust is the next big thing. How do we implement that? How do we get incorporated into that? So, with this network modernization, we are constantly, that's why it needs to be constantly updated to say, hey, we didn't take into account this technology, this capability and how it's being employed. We need to integrate that. But then it goes back to that, to the task force netmod concept is they do that yearly rack and stack of the tasks. They say, hey, we really, last year we didn't put a lot of emphasis on zero trust, but we really need to now because it's going, we see the emphasis that's being placed on it by the DOD and others to really get us there. So we are incorporating all those capabilities and functions, whether they're, the joint warf, the cloud capabilities, or whether it's conceptual documents, we do put that into the network modernization plan. That's why we do it every year to update it.
No, sir. Thank you for that. I know I bootstrapped like a whole bunch of acronyms in there, but I do that too because I think people look sometimes at the podcast as a way to get updates. At least that's kind of what this has kind of morphed into. Like, hey, what are the current topics being talked about, like within the National Capital Region? I might be out at, Camp Geiger, like supporting IT out there, down in North Carolina. So this has been just great to kind of get the perspective, from the National Capital Region.
I think that network modernization plan is really the key because it lays out there everything that we are doing and there is a classified annex to it, but it's at secret level and we can push that out. Or if somebody's interested, they can reach out to me and we can definitely get you a copy. Because you look through that document, you look through the various tasks again from tactical to enterprise, you start seeing, hey, we have this specific task that we are doing to get to get us after the cloud and how we're going to do that, or whether it's the tactical radios. It really is probably that keystone document for if you're a 1702 or if you're an 0602, you should be aware of this document. You should be looking at it and seeing where we're going, because you also have the opportunity to shape it and say, what were you clowns thinking about by putting that in there? We don't want to do that. That's not what we're doing down here in this edge. You need to think about doing, about doing that. And that's, an opportunity for them to feed in to shape that document as well.
Sir, you teed my follow-up question brilliantly. So if I am one of those people, say I'm Lieutenant Schreiner down at 2nd MARDIV, and I'm reading these documents and I think I understand, or maybe I don't, what's my tie-in? What's my preferred, from your vantage point, way to get linked into this stuff and be part of the positive change and find out what's going on?
That's a great question. And I'm going to take a quick alibi. The one document I forgot to mention that all the Marines really should be familiar with is the new doctrinal pub that came out there, MCDP 8 on information that just came out. Commandant, I believe if the commandant has not signed it, he is on the verge of signing it. It is coming out. There are draft copies out there. So if you can probably download that and go from there. I would highly, highly encourage that every Marine out there gets a hold of MCDP 8. Reads it and understands, the Marine Corps' new warfighting function and where we're going with that. That really is a guidepost document that is the conceptual counterpart to the more technical, NetMod plan that goes out there. They are tied together, but I just want to make sure that people take a look at that MCDP 8 also. But a large part of this is also, you know, if you're waiting for mama bird to come flying in and drop the worm into your mouth to figure it out there, it's good, but it's I think part of that, how you find out what's going on, how you influence it, is by going out there, becoming an expert in your field as a communications cyber expert. You go out there, you employ this gear, and you put it in situations, you test and you say, this works, that doesn't work. You'd be truly amazed by the number, how we are influenced at C4 by the feedback that we get back through the fleet from the operations, whether it's a backyard exercise, whether it's a planned exercise, whether it's a MEW deployment, whether it's actually a combat situation or some kind of crisis conflict scenario that those lessons learned. The feedback comes from the bottom to influence where that network modernization plan is. We have a lot of great smart Marines that came from the fleet up there, but the feedback that it comes in, that we get, comes as a result of the experimentation, the trial and error, this worked, that didn't, that got us going up there. So, you know, to answer your question, it's you going out there, backyard with your Marines, testing it out, making connections, seeing this works, that doesn't work. I can't tell you the number of times in my career that we have seen a piece of gear arrives out in the fleet and we said, hey, this, you know, CDNI says, Capability Development Command said, this is the way this gear is supposed to work, and Systems Command said, this is what this gear is supposed to do. But you give it to a Marine or a bunch of Marines, and they will find 10 different ways to make that piece of gear more effective, more efficient, and get the job done. And that's the beauty of what the Marine Corps does. And that gets fed back up through the chain of command, right? That will come through, you know, as you talk to your peers, as you talk to, the senior leaders within your MOS, and you'd be amazed at the depth and complexity of our other senior leaders who aren't communicators, they're commanders, and you explain them and they see what that gear does for them, that feedback gets back to me. So, you know, to your point, it's you playing with the gear, pushing that up and pushing that information up to, you know, the headquarters level at the various echelons as it goes up there. So hope that answers your question.
Absolutely, sir. And for the younger communicators, data point, I don't believe I have ever employed the gear according to the TM.
Yeah. So, I want to add,
don't feel bad doing that.
Yeah. All of us here have been around a little bit of time. Like, you think it's bad now? Imagine 10 years ago when we were figuring all this stuff out, implementing black core routing and trying to figure out wireless communication systems at the tactical level. I mean, go experiment, go play with the stuff, slightly break it, right? You've got a few on your SL3. If you end up breaking one trying to find a new implementation strategy, you got a couple others and now you learned. So
again, you would be amazed at how that drives what we do at the big Marine Corps side. It is that experimentation, trial and error of various pieces or getting your hands on some commercial technology that's how we learned to do the cloud. It's not like Marine Corps, headquarters Marine Corps, C4 didn't come out and say, here's cloud, right? It was guys going out, Marines going out and figuring out how to do it. The tactical systems, the radios from the routing and switching. So it's really, and that's one of the great benefits of being a Marine and the beauty of being in the Marine Corps is just the ingenuity of the individual Marine, the initiative to go out and find solutions to problems that exist with either existing gear or finding something else.
So, sir, somewhat related here. So recently, 2017, in my world, kind of like Marine Corps recent, we split the data MOS from what used to be 065X to 0630 and 0670. And then at the beginning of the cast, Kyle said, wow, this is a big challenge that you have taken on. And Rich mentioned that even understanding the acronyms is almost an MOS in itself. So do you think we are done with the playing around, munging of the MOSs? Did we just get it so right the first time? Or do you foresee with all of this zero trust and cloud and different enclaves and focus on the data, do you see us needing to iterate again in the future as part of this?
If we think we got it right, then I think we're fools, right? I think we really need to continue to iterate this. Number one, you know, the service is changing. The service is morphing in its capabilities. The Commandant has really pushed the force design. So that, by necessity, you know, needs to drive us to change the way the Marine Corps has been done. A lot of Marines I've been talking to, headquarters Marine Corps, my frustration is the comm battalion that, as we all know it now, has not changed since I came back in as a lieutenant back in, 1990, right? It has not changed. Every other MOS, you see artillery battalions divesting of, we divested of tanks, we brought in F-35s, we cut out of the squad. Every other MOS seems to be changing and morphing and modifying itself to adapt to the new warfighting paradigm that's being put out there in support. But we continue to have 8 combat battalions, 1,000 Marines. We've always been 1,000 Marines. Well, should we be? Should we have 4,400 0621 radio operators in the Marine Corps? Should we have less single channel radio operators and, make more data, more 0631s and 063Xs and 7Xs, and put them in there? So I think by necessity, if we say that we're done, I think the 3X and 7X MOSs were good. Can we probably handle some tweaking there? I think we can a little more, and again, I know McSess and the manpower teams are looking at that, tweaking that. So I think we constantly need to do that, because not only is the warfighting paradigm changing, but technology is changing too. I mentioned that earlier. It's constantly going. We can't continue to do what we've done in the past. We need to be flexible with ourselves and have the agility within our own MOS, our own tribe, to say, hey, that's not working. We need to change it. The challenge we have, though, is some of the how the processes that we have in the Marine Corps to change it. Change does not happen rapidly like that. There is, you got to work through CD&I for the TFSD folks. You got to work through TCOM for the training side, because we've got to train those guys. You got to work with recruiters, because you need to recruit a different type of individual, a higher GT score, lack of better word, scores that come in. Those are all things that need to be considered. It's not just as simple as saying, hey, we're gonna shut those down. But I think there are things we can get after, and we are. We're, as a matter of fact, as we speak, we are standing that we stood up an IPT that's going to go kick off the second week of August, that gets after, what does the comm battalion need to look like, the comm squadron need to look like. Because that feeds into a larger discussion of the network battalions that have been rolled out under MAR-4 Cyber to support the fleet. Do the network battalions have enough bodies, have enough structure in the right place to get after, do the missions they need to do? If they don't, where do those bodies come from? Well, maybe they come from the comm battalion, comm squadron. But that's we're beginning to broach that subject, identify where those cuts could potentially come from. But that's not just our decision. Again, the MEF commanders and the commanders out in the fleet have a lot to say about this, because it impacts their ability. If you're taking, even though you may be improving their capability at the network battalion, you may be doing it at the cost of maybe a different unit. And that's something that all needs to be weighed. So again, we are making proposals that our senior leaders will have the ability to make a decision on. I think we owe it as a community to look at ourselves and say, how can we shape ourselves better? It's number one, support force design, to get after the new technologies and to do what we need to do to support the Commandant going forward.
Sir, thanks for that answer. And I actually just want to double click on something you said there, or kind of highlight for the civilian audience. So when the general said McSess, he was talking about our schoolhouse where we train, at least on the communications side, where we train the communications Marines. And this isn't as simple as the general makes a decision, and then next week we take all the people we trained to do enterprise messaging and shift all of those jobs to cloud, and he just clicks his finger and people swap out. We have a model where we take 18-year-old people from high school, come in, train them, and they do a job. And it's not even as simple as planning for the next wave of 18-year-olds. You also have to plan for the wave of people who are going to be teaching this stuff at the schoolhouse. So the change in the military, kind of by design, is not always the easiest thing. So this is even getting right what the problem is and the correct implementation solution still comes with its challenges in implementation.
Again, and I'll layer this into the, as we talk the MCEN, the Marine Corps Enterprise Network that we operate in, and our desire to extend it from the enterprise, meaning, you know, to enterprise level, meaning, let's say, from the Pentagon all the way down to the first island chain, wherever that may be. So that's how do we extend that out there? And we've had the concept of deployed MCEN concept of extending that out there. And I think over time, that was a concept that came about in you know, 2018 or so, the concept was approved. But over time, you know, 4 or 5 years later, technology has changed. The warfighting concepts have changed. You know, a lot of change that concept didn't go with it. So good stuff came out of that. But where we need to look to right now is MCEN 2030, right? Or what the MCEN next? What we got to come up with the right word for it. Whether it's MCEN 2030 or whether MCEN next or whatever, the MCEN of the future, where that needs to go, because that encompasses, the IL-5 utilization for our NIPRNet, which we've already rolled out. But now that also encompasses IL-6, where we do the same thing what we did on NIPRNet for your email with we do that on the SIPRNet, right? Now you start bringing in the zero trust, the concepts into that MCEN concept. The SIPR 2.0 concept, the discussions that are going around, it's closely related to zero trust, but SIPR 2.0 is a discussion General Nakasone and other senior leaders had about a month ago regarding the next version of the SIPRNet. That needs to be brought into it. The mission partner environment piece, I think that's one area where we have not really been very aggressive. I think 3MEF really has been the most aggressive about it, and probably MARSENT, but the other MEFs have touched on it. But, you know, we really need to look at, you know, bringing in the cloud piece into this. We need to bring in, you know, the other functions. How do we bring all that into a MCEN of the future concept? All those new areas, all those new capabilities, which again goes back to your question of, you know, do we have the right MOS structure? Do we have the right training? Do we have the right people? Do we have the right people in the right place to execute all those capabilities? Because this MCEN, as we look at it, is really going to be different than what we see it as today. And it's going to be different than what it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago, what it was and where it's going. And that will, I think, you know, by necessity drive changes in the numbers, the training, and the quantities and qualities of Marines that we need to have supporting us.
And a quick acronym check, IL-5 and IL-6, that stands for Impact Level 5 and Impact Level 6. These are segmented clouds that is available to military warfighters. Just know the complexity there is, it is a somewhat deviation from other clouds, but bring a lot of capability to us.
So, sir, I wanted to ask you a question that we've talked about a couple times on the cast here that I think applies to the mission of Task Force NetMod, but I want to validate that assumption with you, which is software development. Right. Do you think that there is a place for software development as an MOS or as a special tactical function required within Task Force NetMod? Or what do you think on how we should get uniform software developers into the fight in some way, shape, or form?
No, it's a great question. That has a lot of emphasis, not just within the Marine Corps, but also within the DoD as a whole. I do believe that there is a need and a requirement for software development capability within our Corps. And I think there should be Marines who do that. One of the great discussions we're having now is it can't be a zero sum game where we just bring additional bodies. I think you're going to have Marines doing to our previous discussion of the 063X and 067X MOSs and what they do. There may be some capability right now. It's a necessary MOS. That we have, which a necessary MOS just means that you do it, but it's not your assigned. It's not your assigned MOS. It's something the Marine Corps needs, but you're not assigned to it. And when you leave after you do your tour, you just walk away from it. It's in your record, but you're not. It's not something we do forever. But that capability, that requirement, is needed to where we're going. Again, we talked a lot at the beginning of the discussion of NetMod using our data. So again, we have all this data. We need to be able to manipulate it. We need to be able to use it the way that a commander or the senior leaders want that data to be manipulated. And I think Marines are well suited to do that. We are working right now with the Army Software Factory down in Austin, Texas. I had the opportunity to go down there in December and see what they're doing, and it's a really breathtaking what they've done and how they're implementing, how they're recruiting soldiers to come in and to develop that process. It's about a 3-year tour. You know, the first about 9 months or so is training. And after that, they're working with industry partners and as small teams, agile teams, develop that software that's needed. But the requirement for that software is driven by the Army. The Army says, hey, we need a tool to do this. We need this develop or capability done or that capability done. So those requirements for the software development come from the Army and it's done by the soldiers themselves. We are looking to model and to embed ourselves with the Army software factory capability and the Army's and that model to employ that out there. So Lieutenant Colonel Charlie Bach is our lead on that. And he has really done a superb job of laying this out there. Presented to senior leaders to present how we're going to go forward as a software driven force. And we've done some of this already. You know, we had the Innovation Challenge last year when I first got on deck. We had done a software innovation challenge. The Marines from 1MEF came out there using the Marine Corps Business Operating System to develop software, and they came up with a really great tool to get after some of the maintenance requirements they had out there. And they won that software challenge. We just finished a second software innovation challenge. The winner is just being announced right now. Using the tools, the Power Apps, Power BI, the Power Tools, resident in the Microsoft applications that we already have. And really, there was 10 teams that really participated in that innovation challenge. And the capabilities all 10 of those teams came out with were stunning and really exciting to see. And we're going to continue that innovation challenge to continue to offer the opportunity for Marines to say, hey, this is what I can do with the tools you have and with the data we have to manipulate it and to create something. So I think the software development challenge or the software development capability that is out there and number one resident in our Marines, we need to give them the tools, the capability. And as we mentioned earlier, they'll develop and explore and look for ways to manipulate that data. But Charlie Bach, I really think Tank Girl Charlie Bach is really going to be the lead on this going forward, and I think can really answer a lot of questions.
So, sir, thanks so much for teeing me up for a couple things. One, we will promise to the audience, we will do a MCDP8 specific podcast episode. So look forward to that in the coming months. And then we're also going to have Charlie on the cast as well to kind of talk through, because I think going deep into software development with you, sir, right now is going to do the topic an injustice. So we will have a later episode just dedicated to that, because I know there are a lot of questions about software development and the direction and how we're going to do that. So we'll tackle that on a whole nother episode. So I don't want the listeners thinking they're getting shorted. You will get yours.
Yes, sir. So I wanted to kind of pick up from here and just kind of ask a more traditional question. You know, the IC4, or better speaking, Headquarters Marine Corps C4 and DCI, Deputy Commandant for Information in its specific offices, right? One of the traditional roles that has always, and I think most appropriately, been owned by those organizations since they're up in the National Capital Region is the governance component, right, of the technology initiatives that are getting pushed. And so I had kind of a canned question for this earlier, but I'm going to modify this a little bit. So you talked a little bit about, you know, the task force, its task units and task groups underneath it. Do you think that that is the way that you continue to operate moving forward? Like, is that working for you? Because we've seen, you know, the adoption of 365. We see what you're doing with the network modernization plan. These things seem to be working as you create like small agile teams to go drive initiatives. And then to your point, check things off and move on to the next initiative as the DoD CIO pushes the plan down to you. So do you see that model kind of working in the future, like operating like we do as like a MAGTAF, right, at Echelon, but here we're just creating small task groups inside the task force moving forward? Or is there something new that you guys are thinking, like from a governance perspective, of all these initiatives that you're trying to drive across the Corps?
Yes, great question. So we do have, as part of the this was stood up again before I got here. Again, General Malik did a great job setting this up to it. So we do, for the governance process we have for network modernization is the Networks Governance Board. Okay. And that is, it's chaired by myself. But we have the senior leaders, you know, General Heritage from R4 Cyber participates in that. We have the senior leaders from the functional area managers, you know, INL, CD&I, you know, PNR sits in that, the policy and resources folks. Again, so we have senior leaders. And again, I was quite amazed because typically at a certain level, you know, that they say, well, I'm Brigadier General, you name it. I can't be there. I'm going to send my 06 rep. Sometimes that happens, but more often than not, there is the principals are sitting in that discussion at the Network Governance Board. And that's where we have the opportunity to, number one, you know, discuss, you know, to validate, number one, the decisions that are being made by our partners, but also to give guidance on where we think this needs to go. And then when it gets to the discussion of, you know, allocating resources or deciding where we're going to apply resources and how we're going to do that, that governance board is really helps drive and validate and keep the network modernization plan and the task force on track. So the task force will come up and brief the Networks Governance Board. Here's where we stand. Here's where we're going. Here's what we're doing. We have the opportunity to provide them rudder steer and say, no, okay, that's good. Or, hey, we need to go a little faster. We need to go a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right. It's also an opportunity where I've turned this into an opportunity for important areas. Let's say cloud, great example, next Wednesday with the next NGB, we're having everybody come in that's migrating their applications to the cloud. This FY, I think there's 11 applications. Hey, they're all coming in and briefing the status of to the Networks Governance Board to say, here's where we are with the application, moving my IMAT system, integrated manpower and training system. I think it's TCOM responsibility. Have them come in and say, here's where we stand. Here's where we're having issues. Here's our plan to get it done by the end of the fiscal year. So we use it as, number one, as a guidance board, as a typical governance board, but also as a forcing function to make sure that people just aren't, yeah, okay, I got it. The modernization plan told us to do this, but we're not really getting after it. It's our way to kind of say, hey, what's the assessment tool to make sure the network modernization plan is going, and then using that. But below that governance board is the NSG, the network steering group, which is, again, it vets the products before they get up to the NGB, but it's also an opportunity at the 06, 05 and 06 level to really hash out some of the details and also identify problems or issues or challenges that they are having in executing the NetMod plan that need to be brought in, you know, either rectified or brought up to a higher level. So there is that process. And I think it's been a very effective forum going forward. And again, it's a constantly living. We can kind of shape it the way we need to, but I think it's been very positive and, you know, really getting after and forcing through some of the challenges that some kind of the bureaucracy sometimes lays through. And you're able to say, we're not doing that. We can resolve that. We can fix that. There's no more. That's not an excuse. We can fix that problem and bust through with it. So,
yes, sir. Well, first off, sir, thanks for mentioning that. Because when you said 11 apps moving to the cloud, my already like, yay, this is amazing, you know, internal, you know, alarm went off. Because I remember talking about the first app, one, just getting one to the cloud, right? So having a structure like that where there's the equivalent of like a board of directors, if I'm putting my old Amazon hat on, and then some S team level directors, which is the network steering group that you're talking about, and then the task force, which is all the action officers and engineers going and just rocking out all the capabilities. Like, it's just really awesome to see the Marine Corps kind of gaining steam and moving in that direction. So I'm really just excited to kind of see how this model, you know, if it continues moving forward, how it morphs over time. But I think the good news is there are dedicated people that are getting after some things, and there's people holding them accountable to doing that. So you're not operating off of current year deficiencies every year, because 2 years ago, nobody was holding people accountable to the money they said they were going to allocate to the resources or to the initiatives that they were going to deliver. So,
right. I mean, the key is this. It's like, so we wrote this network modernization plan, and the version 2.0, and it's like, what? Wait, you wanted me to actually do that stuff? You didn't want me? What? No, I thought you just wanted us to write the plan. I didn't know you wanted us to actually do what we said we were going to do. So that's what the NGB, you know, gets after. you know, the other piece, I think, you know, you're excited about the 11 apps, and next year, the next FY, it's 56 in the 50s. A good chunk of those are going from Kansas City, trying to, you know, move a lot of the apps currently in Kansas City and get them out of Kansas City, close down the data center aspect of Kansas City, not Kansas City as a whole, but just the data center access aspect, and get all those apps to the cloud. So that is our goal, to get all that. And again, the NGB, we are working with PEO Digital, Mar4 Cyber, NMACOG, and others who are implementing that plan to make sure that there is nothing in the way to stop you from moving. I think for HCS, it's about 46 apps to get out of Kansas City and into the cloud. That's our goal, is to get all 46 of those done before the end of FY. So September of next year, 2023, we'll have about 46 and then 50 overall. There's onesies and twosies across the board. So 11 is good, but we're looking for a bigger chunk next year.
That's awesome, sir. Just hearing about logarithmic functions in scale is amazing. Go ahead, John. It looks like you got something to say.
Yeah, so, sir, one plug, one question. So, plug, governance. I know there is no better way to get a chief warrant officer to run fast than say, here comes a governance meeting. Off they go, right? So you just heard the general say, this is where we are enforcing getting things done. This is where we're enforcing the plan. This is where we're enforcing the vision. If the technicians are absent when we are setting governance, you can expect the results will be exactly what you would expect from that. So plug, please do not go running. Second thing, sir, how do you, because you just talked about the entire Marine Corps, and I have observed both of these, both the NSG and the NGB. And my question is, how do you as a leader help make sure that we don't have leadership by committee? Because we are Marines and we are aggressive and we want to get after things. But sometimes you get a bunch of senior people in the room, everybody's got an idea, and it sounds great in the moment, like, we should study that a little bit more. We should think about that more. How can we maintain the governance committees, but also maintain the level of aggression and testing and flexibility that we're used to as Marines?
I think, it's a great question. It's good to have senior leaders over the top of you who are demanding results, and that want outcomes. I can't tell you what a benefit that is to get stuff done, because when your boss is driving you to deliver outcomes, it becomes very easy for you to look for those below you and to drive to make sure that they are delivering outcomes as well. I mean, I think the buy-in from the senior leaders and you can say that from any level on any task, whether you're a logistician, whether you're an aviator, or infantryman, whether any MOS, it doesn't matter. But I think it's really particularly important here in the in this environment, in the cyber information environment, to really drive hard and expect and demand results. Because if not, it does become very easy to say, oh, that's really complicated. And we do become the desire to really examine the problem and really get into the weeds of really beeps and squeaks and some of the stuff. It's like no, we don't have time for that. We want to make sure this thing works. So I think having in the ability of our leaders to understand this much better, our senior leaders really do understand at a very high level. Just listening to these guys, these commanders talk, they understand what data is worth. They understand not just IT, but the cyber aspect of it. So they become very demanding customers as well. And there's a desire on their part to say, hey, this isn't working. Why not? It's not just because they didn't get an email, but they want to know why and how can they make a decision faster to fire that Nemesis strike missile on the first island chain quicker. And they do get that there is that kill chain is vitally dependent upon the network modernization plan. They get that. So they're asking some really hard questions saying, I want to fire that missile faster. How do I do that? And it can't be, well, we'll get back to you, or they demand, they need results. So having that as the forcing function, I think is incredibly helpful, even though painful at times.
So, sir, I have to ask this question because it's so topical, right? We have new MOSs, the information maneuver MOS. There's a series of them inside of it for that occupational field. And so I think a lot of the listeners, to the extent that you can in this medium, talk about the synergy and relationship between some of the new domains, right? Like we have a Space Force now. There's a MAR-4 component there. There's MAR-4 Cyber, the MAR-4 Cyber and MAR-4 Space Commander are one person right now. He is dual-hatted. Can you talk just about like the integration of those, you know, warfighting functions that reside within those two domains?
Sure. That's a great question. And I really appreciate it because I think it is incredibly, apropos of the time we're fighting, especially we get into as we begin to synchronize the information environment and the effects and the capabilities that reside therein. If you look at the first couple, the first three shots in the next war, whatever they may be, are going to be, as we've heard, space, cyber, and in the information sphere, i.e. trying to influence our ability to fight. That, you know, before the first shot is fired, before the first missile, you saw it in Ukraine. It was very similar to that. There were cyber effects being done. They were trying to manipulate the space. I think the ViaSat-1 is now out there as they're trying to disrupt that capability. The Russians were trying to do that. And then obviously with the information piece, influence our ability to think and react and influence our populace. But for the Marine Corps, for the joint force and really for the Marine Corps, an understanding of how space and cyber are inextricably linked and they support one another. One of the things that I think is key is understanding that you can deliver capability, you can deliver information from space down to the ground, right? And that's done, through those satellites, those on-orbit capacity, those on-orbit assets. But those on-orbit assets are almost useless if the ground infrastructure is not secured. It needs to be resilient, it needs to be secure, it needs to be redundant, and it needs to be available in order to fly those assets in space. That's why it's so critical for the cyber side to really protect our assets on the ground. And there's an offensive side to it, but there's also a huge Doden operations and defensive side of protecting that infrastructure, making sure that space infrastructure that supports the tracking, telemetry, and control of those on-orbit assets is available and ready at all times in order to do that mission. Once that's done, that's the key. That's where the cyber comes in, and that's why when we were at when I was at Space Command, really drove merging the J-36, created a J-36 while I was out there to pull in all the cyber functions and capabilities that come in and support support Space Command and all the various elements that are out there. Bring those capabilities together to defend, to integrate the space and the cyber together as opposed to keeping them in the silos. You can't, in my view, you couldn't do one without the other. You need to do them concurrently and supportive of one another. I think one of the bigger, as a typical warfighting for a MAGTAF, you rely on space and you're less reliant on the terrestrial infrastructure. You are relying on terrestrial, but it's out there. But you really rely on the space capabilities, that the information and knowledge that comes from space that flows down to you. When you're doing space, it's opposite. It's really, you're really concerned about the terrestrial infrastructure in order to make sure your space assets are available, functioning, and doing what they need to do. So I think it really became apparent. I think General Dickinson, the commander of U.S. Space Command, highlighted this. He continues to highlight it, that integration of space and cyber, in that two of the services, the Marine Corps and the Navy, have dual-hatted their space and their cyber commanders. MAR-4 Space and MAR-4 Cyber. General Heritage wears both hats. The same thing with the Navy. That really, and the Army is not moved to that I've seen that closely, but they understand the need and necessity of cyber and space being together. So I think it's really as we go, and it's an exciting time for all the communities, whether you're 17 or an 06. I'm sorry, yeah, 17 or an 06. The ability to it's you know, to utilize those capabilities and the skills that you're bringing onto the fight and the tools that you have to enable those capabilities and bring that capability down to the warfighter. So again, inextricably linked, always will need to be that way, and it will continue to be that way in the future.
We are at that time. It is time for Kyle to hit us with the hottest of hot takes.
So, sir, you said something a little earlier that kind of caught my eye, and I'm going to use that as my hot take right now, which is this year your goal is to migrate just over a dozen applications by the end of the year. Next year, the goal is to migrate close to 50. That logarithmically scales up pretty quickly, pretty excitedly, pretty terrifyingly for those involved in the process. But there has been for a long time this critical mass, and getting to what you actually said, which was that, oh crap, now that we've built the plan, we actually have to do this thing. This is near and dear to my heart, since I have to build plans that people have to execute immediately and they have to be super comfortable to do it. And the vast majority of the customers that I'm working with on a day-to-day basis, but the Marine Corps and a lot of the DOD agencies for the last few years have sort of had this strange luxury. And for those of you that have not followed this path who are listening to this, I'm sorry, I don't mean to over stereotype of saying, well, I'm going to build this plan, and then whoever comes in and takes the reins for me is going to be the one that actually executes it. And there has been a disservice that is done to all parties involved when that is the case. And I think that as you start to ramp up, right, and I'm going to use the royal you here of just the Marine Corps, Task Force Netmon, whatever you want to call it, as you start to get to the point where you're actually having to migrate large numbers of applications each year, that reaches critical mass where the people who are planning are actually doing the execution as well. And I think that there are fundamentally valuable feedback loops that happen within that process that help you spin the flywheel significantly faster as you go forward. And I, for one, am super stoked to hear about what your mission with Task Force Netmon is right now, sir, and cannot wait to see the results of that. So just remember, if you're just a plan builder and you don't actually execute, or you're just an executor who doesn't actually plan build, you're missing out. You should do both of those things. There's inherent value in all of it. There's my hot take.
Awesome. And Rich, I notice, I don't know if it's because the general's on, your knife hands generally sheathed. Bring them out.
Bring them out. I guess some Marines know that those lyrics. But yes, John. But I think today I do have a knife hand, and I think it's appropriate, right? So my knife hand moment today, there'll only be one, by the way, is about lethality. And I think the general hit on this multiple times in the podcast. So I just want to call out a couple things. I think Marines win because they're lethal. At whatever part of the competition continuum they're in, they're lethal in that aspect, whatever that means. If it's competition, it's on the competition side, low end of the spectrum. If it's crisis and conflict, they're lethal there, right, at the high end of the spectrum. And so I think in regards to technology and what we've been talking on the podcast today about, I think you could break that lethality down into two bins from today's perspective, right? And the first one is, you know, and this is going to sound kind of awkward, but like from our business systems, you have to be lethal. What does that mean? Like, we make Marines lethal because we take care of them with things that the network modernization plan is driving. Two specifically. The first is your records management, right? What do we know about these Marines? Can we use them effectively? And can we then use that records management for talent management, right? Can we promote them? Can we retain them? Can we train them? I think those are huge aspects of making an individual Marine lethal. When you look at the second half of the other bin that I mentioned, I think that is all about operations. And in my opinion, that's all about targeting. What does the MEF commander want to deliver effects against, both kinetic and non-kinetic? And how can you layer in all these information maneuver capabilities into delivering those effects, right? Both kinetic and non-kinetic. We talk a lot on this podcast about the non-kinetic effects, but so I think that's the knife hand moment, John, right? Like, Marines win because we're lethal, literally the edge of the knife hand. And we have to look at that from both a business system and an operational system aspect. And I would just offer that, you know, we talked about the joint all domain command and control concept, or JADC2, on the podcast today. The general brought up, you know, MCDP8 information. I think if you're a Marine and you have not read those two documents, you're missing out on what it is we're trying to do as a joint force. Which is sense and make sense and then act appropriately on all those volumes of information that these systems are processing or sending over a network. So that's it, John. That's my knife hand. Hopefully it was lethal enough for you.
I'm supposed to go to canned outro right now, but I just would like tip of the hat to Rich as he just excitedly and passionately tied records management to lethality.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm bought in on that, but okay.
Thank you.
But
thank
okay,
you,
yes.
Yeah. Like, yes. Dear listeners, thank you for joining us. You can connect with us on social media by going to Twitter and following at USMC underscore TFPHOENIX. That's at USMC underscore Task Force Phoenix. Our editor is Sarah Clarkson, and marketing support is provided by Jake Osborne. You can support the cast by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a 5-star review and a company comment. And with that, we are out.